And welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 113, Spotlight on DC Comics, Final Crisis, A Reading Timeline. This is Chris Mosby doing a solo run this evening. I got a late start, some on vacation. I've been sick. I know we said we were done with Final Crisis, but I found this wonderful timeline written by Alan Kistler on Comics Alliance. It's a reading timeline of various things that have come out even 2 years after Final Crisis ended that fit into the timeline and kind of help it make a little bit more sense, especially having to do with Batman's supposed death. And I thought it was, pardon me if I cough a little bit, I haven't been sick for about a week now. Anyway, kind of explains things and exactly, you know, how far back, Morrison actually, you know, planned this Final Crisis series, as far as going back all the way to, 2005. So anyway, just read this little thing, give some kind of ideas on some dates, some of these things, and I'm going to get a drink here before I start. Okay, here we go. We'll start out with the intro that he writes, perhaps the most sprawling and continue-heavy crossover of all time. DC Comics' Final Crisis has already earned its place in comics history as the publisher's most polarizing mainstream works, as we have discussed in our podcast. For every reader who hails the epic's complex story architecture as genius, another decries its inaccessibility. But is it really an incomprehensible swamp of superhero lore? Not with the right roadmap. Open your heart to the possibilities of a fully realized reading experience with our Final Crisis timeline. Let's see. A little history of Darkseid in the Fourth World. 40 years ago, this was written in 2010, so you know, 43 years ago. Jack Kirby began his now-famous Fourth World Saga in the pages of Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, number 133. Over the next several issues, readers were introduced to Project Cadmus, the DNA-aliens, and the twisted scientists Mokari and Simeon, who ran the Evil Factory. By the same time that next year, comic book fans learned of two cosmic worlds, New Genesis and Apocalypse, and of their inhabitants, the New Gods. There was the villainous Darkseid. Okay, Darkseid. I'm going to say Darkseid for the rest of this episode. I think we hashed that back and forth. Master of the Omega Force, and his elite troops such as Granny Goodness, the Female Furies, Glorious Godfrey, Kalibak, and the Torturer Desaad. Pardon me. Lost my place. Okay, here we go. Fighting for the side of the light were Highfather, Lightray, Furies, Glorious Godfrey, Kalibak, and her torturer Desaad. Oops, I skipped. That's crappy. Fighting for the side of the light were Highfather, Lightray, Darkseid's son Orion, and others such as Scott Free. I think my eyes are getting bad. Anyway, who gave up godhood to become the second Earth escaped artist called Mr. Miracle. And there was a mysterious scientist Metron who seemed to be a new god yet claimed he was born on neither New Genesis or Apocalypse, that he was something unforeseen which existed before the new gods and would be here after they were gone. Let's see. So a lot of that stuff was made way, way, way long time ago. Grant Morrison didn't come up with it, of course. Let's see. Spanning across multiple comic book titles, the Fourth World Saga, partially inspired by Kirby's experiences in World War II, envisioned a cosmic conflict amongst gods and used technology rather than magic. At stake was reality and free will itself. Darkseid the Destroyer intended to master the anti-life equation, which would allow him to transform people into his justifiers, forced to think as he wished them to think, to act as he wished them to act. One thing that was clear in Kirby's stories was that eventually the new gods would die and the fourth world would end, leaving the universe to give rise to another generation of gods for the fifth world. When he wrote JLA in the 1990s, Grant Morrison hinted at this future more than once. Pardon me. In 2008, the fourth world finally ended in Jim Starlin's The Death of the New Gods, which led into Final Crisis, a mega crossover by Grant Morrison that showed how Darkseid, now having mastered Daniel Life Equation at last, was able to make one last play controlling and corrupting the entire cosmos. The story also relied heavily on elements from other Kirby series such as OMAC, the One-Man Army Corps, which featured a hero named Buddy Blank in a possible future, and Commandy, which showcased Blank's grandson many years later. I didn't know that. That's a good one. Both of these series took place in the same timeline as the cult classic Atomic Knight stories, which also wound up inspiring parts of Final Crisis. It's been over a year since the major crossover ended, yet readers are still feeling its effects. Grant Morrison recently released two lost chapters in the pages of Batman. Let's talk about that. And Judd Winnick gave us a new epilogue in Superman Batman number 76. Of course, that's volume 1. So, with all of these new tie-ins and the fact that this is the anniversary of the Fourth World, it's a good time to travel down, at the time of this writing it was, travel down a timeline for fans who were confused by marketing, release dates, and massive continuity to figure out how the entire final crossover fit together. And it does fit together, according to this guy, which some of this I don't agree with, but hey, you know. Take a drink. I steal so much from the Legion podcast, it's not even funny. Alright, here we go. Spoilers for all the way up to 2010, so. Alright, so, number one. The first in the reading order. Seven Soldiers Mr. Miracle series, 1 through 4. Shiloh Norman, apprentice of Scott Free, resumes his role as third escape artist called Mr. Miracle. While performing a stunt over a controlled black hole, that's an interesting concept, isn't it? He receives a vision of alternate realities in a future where the new gods will die, but Darkseid will find a way for his spirit to survive in a human host. The visions last for 7 days, and Metron appears, telling him that this experience was to help him master the life equation and become an avatar of freedom, since the new gods will need a soldier to help fight Darkseid after they're gone. Interesting. Number two, Seven Soldiers, Frankenstein, number 1 through 4. Focusing on adventures of the Frankenstein monster, it is here that the fans learn about the government-funded superhuman advanced defense executive, or SHADE, S-H-A-D-E, which plays a major role in Final Crisis. Let's see, where was that? So we're talking that was in 2006, roughly. When that takes place, so 3 years before that, he's building up to this. Now, I never read that series, so. In the actual, at the end of that, the end of the Grant Morrison's epic Seven Soldiers mega-series, Mr. Miracle encounters the gangster Boss Darkseid, who is really Darkseid the Destroyer in a human host. Before Shiloh figures out how Darkseid can exist as a spirit on Earth while simultaneously living in his body on the planet Apocalypse, the hero gets shot in the head. Interesting. Now, having mastered the life equation, Shiloh escapes death and claws out of his grave. He also helps save Urakles, A-U-R-A-K-L-E-S, who is not only revealed to be Earth's first superhero, but is a callback to the character Oracle, who appeared in only one story decades ago. When the JLA saved the original Seven Soldiers from being lost in time. and had been forgotten by most fans. Huh. Interesting. So, back to the OMAC project, which is in 2005 during the Infinite Crisis. That's the origin of the post-crisis OMAC units, which play a major role in Infinite Crisis, as we know. By the time Final Crisis takes place, Shade has revised the OMACs into more human-looking forms referred to as Biomacs. Take a drink. I will. Okay, now, we're talking about Infinite Crisis crossover, not shortly after that. Got my notes here. Yeah, between 2005 and 2006. And according to statements that were made by Grant Morrison and DC co-publisher Dan Didio, Infinite Crisis takes place about a week or so after the events of Seven Soldiers megaseries. A major event from this crossover that bleeds into Final Crisis is the fact that the city of Bloodhaven is laid waste due to the toxic monster Chemo being dropped on it. Yeah, I remember that. It was that big freaking battle, which, you know, screwed up the Nightwing series a tad. And then right after that, which came out in 2006, Crisis Aftermath, Battle for Bloodhaven. The Myst miniseries features the state of Bloodhaven following Infinite Crisis and its evacuation. It also brings back Gardner Gale, formerly the outsider known as Atomic Knight. Now, Grail has formed a whole army of 125 Atomic Knights that patrol Bloodhaven, which is a reinterpretation of their role pre-crisis. Readers also see the Command D bunker, which in another timeline acts as the inspiration for the quote-unquote last boy on Earth, to be given the name Command D. Several elements of this miniseries turn up in Final Crisis, and had more readers been aware of it, there would have been less confusion about certain plot points later on. Now, I actually read that series, so I understood exactly where those Atomic Knights came from. Now, here's one that I really didn't know. I don't know if I ever finished this, but that series Salvation Run. This is just over a year after the events of Infinite Crisis. Many of Earth's supervillains are deported to an alien world. They war with each other and then find out that the Martian Manhunter, John Jones, who is also a centuries-long enemy of Darkseid, is among them. Luther gets everyone home and John is left to starve and wither away in a fiery cage, unable to communicate with anyone who might help him escape. I don't know if I actually finished that series or have them all. This mentions Countdown to Final Crisis, but it says, just ignore it, which, please do, don't. 52 issues of that. It was horrible. More caffeine. Here we go. Moving along. And one of my really good work by Jim Starlin, as you all know, I am a big fan. Death of the New Gods, number 1 through 8. You can get that in trade paperback. That's good stuff. That came around 2007 and 2008, roughly. So, at that point, it's time for Age of the Fourth World to end, and so the new gods start falling like dominoes. Scott Free resumes his Mr. Miracle role, but then goes a little crazy before he finally meets his end. Darkseid finally learns the anti-life equation. The Source resurrects Orion so he can go kill his evil daddy, and readers are left wondering who's going to win that fight. If you have no idea what a new god is, this story explains everything you need to know and is good prep for Final Crisis. Excuse me. Let's see. DC Universe Number 0. Having existed as pure information and energy since the first crisis, Barry Allen comes a human being again. It is implied that this is caused by the multiverse itself. Since Barry saved it in the past, and now it needs a protector again. But Jeff Johns will later blame his return on Zoom in Flash Rebirth. As he returns to physical life, Barry sees the past, present, and future, getting glimpses of several other DC stories, and doing lots of advertising in the process. He finds out that Darkseid's spirit survived physical death at the hands of Orion, because it was fueled by the prayers of criminals gathered by his new priest, the old JLA villain Libra. Darkseid's cosmic energies caused his spirit to fall through time, arriving on Earth before the events of the Seven Soldiers crossover began. That's how Shiloh met Boss Darkseid over a year before the death of the New Gods. Interesting. Now, let's see. Birds of Prey number 118 came out. I had a cover date of June 2008. Black Alice is kidnapped and taken to the Darkseid Club in New York, where she learns that Boss Darkseid and his cronies are kidnapping young metahumans. The prisoners are drugged with quote-unquote Bernadette's juice and forced to fight in an arena while becoming loyal to Boss Darkseid and Granny. Next, number 12 we're on here, if you're keeping track at home. The Children of Wally West are... Children of Wally West are captured for the Darkseid Club. While Wally is busy with a battle, the kids are forced to escape on their own, unaware of the full nature of the club and its intentions. Teen Titans, volume whatever, 2, I don't know. This is all pre-Flashpoint, of course. Teen Titans number 5960, the villain Clock King and his new band of Terror Titans, quote-unquote, attempt to kidnap the Teen Titans for the Darkseid Club to make them fight in the metahuman arena and drug them into serving the will of Boss Darkseid. Now, let's see. Batman Volume 1, number 676 to 681. Batman, which is the Batman Rest in Peace storyline, which takes place, cover date of June 2008 and December 2008. It's around the time that Final Crisis is going on, which kind of made it, Morrison was writing that as well. It's made it a little weird because he was in Final Crisis at the time, at the same time, and he was supposedly gone in the Batman RIP storyline, which is kind of hard to explain. Justice League of America number 21, and I do believe that is that's right after the Metzler run, Lightning Saga. Take a drink for that. That was cover date of July 2008, which confused me because it shows a picture of the original Human Flame, you know, back in the 70s, I guess. Anyway, Justice League, and this is number 15, Justice League of America number 21. The old JLA villain Libra reappears in public for the first time in years, carrying the crime Bible that was featured in 52, great series, got its own miniseries. That's another great series. Anyway, he rescues the Human Flame, a villain so old and obscure that only trivia freaks like myself, which is the guy that wrote this, Morrison, Robert Greenberger, and Mark Wade don't have to look him up on Wikipedia. The Human Flame wants revenge on Martian Manhunter, so Libra finally releases the weakened John from his fiery prison and brings him to Earth, leading into Final Crisis number 1. Something I must have missed somewhere that happened. That's when he was captured. Salvation Run was an interesting series. So, now, this is where you get things get a little freaky. Let's see, where was it? Okay, now it says, number 16, Batman number 701. That didn't come out, and cover date is September 2010. So, almost to, you know, Final Crisis 2008-2009, so like a year, year and a half, or 6 months after, well, at least a year. Almost two. So, after the events of Batman RIP, Rest in Peace, Bruce Wayne takes a few days to recover, during which Gotham starts to go nuts, and Lever makes his return appearance in the pages of Justice League of America. After his rest period, Batman is told that Orion is dead, again, and his detective skills are needed on the scene. He dons his... I didn't go over Batman RIP very well, did I? Let's go back. Batman RIP, okay. Back to 14. Skip that. I didn't explain that. Batman faces Dr. Hurt and the Black Glove Group as they attempt to drive him insane with post-hypnotic suggestions, drugs, and live burial. Batman whips them all through a combination of his own badass skills, that's right, and a violent split personality. I love this part. He deliberately created as a failsafe if someone attempted mind control on him again. It's happened in the past, after all. He's just that good. Before Dr. Hurt disappears, he claims to be put a curse on Batman's cape and cowl. Says that the next time the hero wears them, he'll be the last time. During this story, readers are also shown a glimpse of the ending of Batman and Robin number 3, that's volume 1, which will be published and take place months after Final Crisis is over. Now, okay, back. Justice League number 21, we talked about that. Now, Batman number 701. This takes place after Batman Rest in Peace. Okay, hold on 1 second. Batman takes a few days to recover, during which Gotham starts to go nuts and Lever makes his return appearance in the pages of Justice League of America. After his rest period, Batman is told that Orion is dead again and his detective skills are needed on the scene. He dons his possibly cursed by this Dr. Hurt, his cape and cowl, and this leads directly into Final Crisis number 1. Starts out in the past. Anthro, the first boy, is visited by Metron, and later has a vision of Commandy, last boy. Orion is found dead in Metropolis. After months of being imprisoned and weakened, John is brought to Earth by Libra and speared and killed. The skies are turning red, an indication that reality itself is in trouble. A monitor becomes human. More Jack Kirby created characters get involved. Now we go into, this is number 18, Final Crisis and Rage of the Red Lanterns and Green Lantern number 35 to 42. In between discovering Orion's body and finding out that John is dead, Hal Jordan and John Stewart go on a quick mission and introduces them to some new Colored Lantern Corps. The story has a lot of rage and some hope with a little bit of avarice. Story has no impact at all on Final Crisis and is really just lead up to Blackest Night, annoying fans who thought Darkseid might show up. That's pretty funny. They did mark it as a tie-in. Final Crisis Requiem. An extended cut of John's death is shown, showing that DC foresaw that some readers might start hating because they thought it would happen too quickly. Aquaman shows up at John's funeral in this tie-in, and no one seems bothered by this, despite the fact that he was still quite literally and unquestionably dead when the story was published. Go figure. Here's a series I didn't read. Terror Titans number 1 through 6. We're on item number 20. Let's see. The events of this miniseries take place after Final Crisis number 1. Boss Darkseid seemingly died just after his visit with Dan Turpin, leaving Clark King to take over the Los Angeles branch of the Darkseid Club. In the process, he kills the human hosts of some Darkseid's forces. Darkseid. It should be Darkseid. It says right there, Boss Darkseid, so it should be Darkseid. Okay, fine. Darkseid's forces. The mini-series also features the young Hero Static making his debut to the mainstream DC Universe. Now, Final Crisis number 2. Morrison introduces the hilarious super young team from Japan, Sonny Sumo, a Kirby-created Japanese fighter who can heal almost most wounds through mental focus. Shows up in Japan, even though years ago, Darkseid used the Omega Sanction to send him to the distant past. Meanwhile, Batman deduces that Orion was killed by a bullet made from Radion, a substance which is toxic to new gods. that was fired backwards in time from some point in the future, proving he really is the world's greatest detective. He's then captured and taken to the Command D bunker in Bloodhaven, which has been turned into the new evil factory. Oh, and the Flash is meeting a strip club, a place where women flash customers. That's pretty funny, actually. I'm cutting out some of the jokes, but that one I had to leave. Now, number 22, the miniseries Final Crisis Rogue's Revenge, which is really good. I think some Scott Collins art in there. I don't remember. Let's look. Scott Collins art? Why, yes. Scott Collins art. Great stuff. The Rogues decide they aren't going to play Libra's reindeer games anymore and wind up having to face their would-be replacements, as well as the Psycho's features, Inertia, and Zoom. It says here that the miniseries doesn't affect the main storyline, but the Rogues kick a lot of ass in it. Libra has some fun scenes and things, and there are things that will generally surprise you and remind you why Barry Allen is important. Now, this is a perfect example of a tie, quote-unquote, tie-in miniseries that's actually better than the main series. I found a lot of these tie-in series were actually better than Final Crisis itself, and that's a perfect example. That was written by Jeff Johns. Okay, number 23. Let me have a drink here. Okay, Final Crisis number 3. The body of Boss Darkseid is finally found in the abandoned and boarded up New York branch of the Darkseid Club. Alan Scott, Golden Age Green Arrow, uses Article X, which is barely mentioned since DC's All-Star Squadron series ended back in the 30s or 40s, whenever that was, to gather the heroes into an army, as was done by FDR during World War II. Libra shows he's a bastard even to his lackeys. Okay. I forget what happened there. Sourcewall reappears and goes digital, signaling that things are going to hell. Oracle notes the presence of a new Aquaman. The anti-life equation launches, causing most of the Earth to fall under Darkseid's will. Bad times. Now, number 24, and this is what I mentioned when we were doing the main thing, and I'd like to have gone through that Superman Beyond series, because there was some good stuff in there, but, you know, that's a lot to get through. It was confusing, but it was still good, some good art. Final Crisis Superman Beyond, number 1 through 2. Superman joins parallel universe counterparts in a yellow submarine that travels through the bleed. The true origin behind the monitors is discovered, and Superman learns about Mandrake, a vampire monitor who feeds on the life essence of entire universes, and even as he limits their growth. This is also a fun callback to one of Morrison's most famous issues of Animal Man. I have no idea what the hell that's about. And here's, yeah, another example of a miniseries tie-in better. Final Crisis Revelations, number 1 through 5, takes place during the days immediately following the anti-life equation being unleashed. The Spectre and Libra throw down. Readers meet a new angelic hero called the Radiant, which I don't believe has ever been seen that since then. He helps deal with the chaos. And turns out the biblical story of Cain was based on a DC supervillain. Was actually Vandal Savage, if I remember correctly. Yes. Final Crisis Secret Files. For those who weren't sure who Libra was, this explains his history while revising it slightly and reeling at last how I got mixed up with Darkseid. The only reason I don't suggest reading this before Final Crisis number 1 is that it gives away some details of issues number 1 and 3. Well, and it came out after, so, I mean, you know. Final Crisis Resist. This was a one-shot. Pretty good. Summarizes Checkmate, Snapper Carr, and others dealing with the week's Following the Anti-Life Equation transmission, Mr. Terrific decides to dust off the old Omax that caused such a fuss during Infinite Crisis. Snap Picard and Sheeta get naked, as responsible adults sometimes do when they love each other very much or have at least a few drinks. That was a weird scene, but yeah. The cool thing about that is reveals a Snap Picard still has these teleporting powers that he got back in the old Invasion series, and he snaps his fingers and teleports, and he's been working for Checkmate ever since. And then there's Final Crisis Submit. Black Lightning kicks a lot of ass and runs into Tattooed Man and his family. I think we talked about that a little bit. He gives T-Man a design that can be used against Darkseid Metron Circuit, but it is then captured and turned into a Justifier. Alright, on to Final Crisis number 4. Final Crisis Submit was a one-shot. Very good, I thought. It was actually better than some of this Final Crisis stuff. Final Crisis number 4, a month after the Anti-Life Equation was broadcast worldwide, Turpin finally submits to Darkseid's possession. Humanity is struggling to survive in a world ruled by evil. Superman is missing. He's in other dimensions, and Superman Beyond number 1 and 2. Superman is missing, and most people on Earth are now working as evil justifiers. Alan Scott rallies Earth's heroes because he's awesome like that. Yeah, and interesting. And then the sky starts bleeding, which is totally messed up. Okay. Let's see. Some readers complained that Iron Man's colors were wrong, showing their air ignorance of the fact that the original Iron Man returned to life sometime before Final Crisis began, and thus the colors are correct. Oh yeah, I remember that. He was caught in time, and yeah. Final Crisis number 5. Let's see. Where is that? My notes. Okay. Final Crisis number 5. The heroes make a final stand in the ruins of Bloodhaven as readers get more references to old Kirby stories. The Green Lantern Corps is on its way. Batman escapes the evil factory. Nix Uton regains his power when he meets the new incarnation of Metron, who told us a long time ago that he wasn't actually a new god and would survive in some form even after they were all gone. And he turns up with a mother box disguised as a Rubik's Cube, which is, you know, kind of funny. Okay, now this is a typo here, but this is number 31. It says Batman number 698 to 683, but what it should say is Batman number 682 to 683, which takes place in 2009. This is a two-part interlude. It shows Batman's imprisonment in the evil factory from Final Crisis number 2 up to his escape in number 5. He's put through virtual reality simulations that twist his memories to resemble many pre-crisis stories. Bruce realizes that this is being done by Scott Free's old enemy, the Lump, a mind leech. Before escaping, Bruce takes out a clone army of evil Batman through the combination of will and his own memories. Pretty cool. That's why Batman is awesome. Now, Final Crisis number 6. Villains start turning on each other. Grant Morrison explains why Orion seemingly died a few times rather than complaining that other writers shouldn't have been mucking about with the new gods. Batman uses the Radiant Bullet to poison Darkseid's host body and then gets zapped with the Omega Sanction, which, from Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle told us that was an attack that exiles you through time and space, which is what I was talking about when we were talking about that earlier. Superman is holding Batman's dead body, but it was a clone, which we come to in a minute. Superman returns from an untold adventure and finds a Batman-like corpse, which has his exact DNA, which was revealed in Batman and Robin Volume 1, number 7. We'll get to that in a minute. And has every wound that he had suffered from over the years, as later revealed in Batman and Robin number 8 and Superman and Batman number 76. Readers also get to see Mr. Miracle, the Miracle Machine again, a device introduced in 1968, remembered by only the most diehard fans of Legion of Superheroes, which would be me and both of the guys on this podcast. turns out the question is the inspiration of the Faceless Enforcers of the Global Peace Agency, originally seen in Jack Kirby's OMAX series. Now, the next one, number 33, mentions Batman and Robin number 8, which takes place February-March 2010, obviously 2 years after. Now, what this doesn't say is how cool that story is long story short, involving Batwoman, it's after Dick Grayson has taken the cowl, and Batman's body is stolen, I think. I was just rereading it right before I started. And, well, long story short, his body gets thrown into a Lazarus pit, the last Lazarus pit, because Batman has been destroying them over the years to keep Ra's al Ghul from resurrecting. So, as far as they were concerned, they weren't sure if it was him or not. And of course, the whole idea was the crime Bible people were doing that to make some kind of Lord of Death, I believe it was. Let me double check here. Yes. Yeah, a God of Evil, which it is the twisted clone of the real one. So after he comes out, and of course, you know, the Batman, anybody that's in the Lazarus pit is a little crazy at first. So, goes a flashback, Darkseid talking to one of the Malak guy, one of the funky painted on eyebrows. But he's talking to Darkseid, and he's telling him, says, "We call," he said, because of what Batman did, he made them all insane. So he's explaining to Darkseid, "We were forced to euthanize our army of Batman replicas, the great one, who caused him to experience his every wound, every heartbreak and hurt. But his memories made them insane, uncontrollable, and he's trying to say, it's not my fault." And he tells him, "Dispose of them all but one, a perfect copy of Batman dead. I can use that." So that's where that came from. It makes perfect sense. It explains that. Batman's dead body. Perfect. All the wounds are there. Well, it was a perfect clone. And, you know, it was dead. So that's what Superman was holding. Makes a lot more sense now. Now, Final Crisis number 7. It says, okay, this story definitely takes place many months after Final Crisis. It's like 2 years. However, it does contain a flashback for anyone curious as to why one of Mokari, that's what the thing's name, Batman clones survived and how it came to possess all Batman's old wounds, confirming that Darkseid is just as good as Batman when it comes to multiversal chess games. All right. Great idea for a drinking game listening to this episode. Every time I say Darkseid, or sorry, Darkseid instead of Darkseid, you take a drink. Anyway, Darkseid. See, I just did it again. Darkseid. Anyway, continue. Now, Final Crisis number 7. Time and space are collapsing as long as Darkseid's spirit still exists. Heroes and scientists make preparations so that humanity will survive no matter what. After Darkseid is defeated, Mandrake shows up in a last-ditch effort to feed off the energies of now weakened DC Universe. Battles are fought and won. The Global Peace Agency and others arrive from the reborn Earth 51, which is apparently where Jack Kirby's classic series of Commanding and Olmec take place. In the distant past of the mainstream DC Earth, Anthro dies an old man just as Bruce Wayne appears, which, as we know, he was transported into the past in the Omega Sanction. Now, this came out in 2010, cover date November 2010, number 35. Mentions Superman Batman number 76, the day after Darkseid and Mandrake are defeated. Superman informs Dick Grayson, Alfred Pennyworth, and Tim Drake about Bruce Wayne's apparent death. Dick is initially as skeptical as most DC readers when about to snooze. The latter half of the story takes place after Battle of the Cowl, when Dick Grayson decides up to him to become the new Batman. So it's kind of rehashing some of that stuff. And, of course, that the Batman and Robin number 8, 7, and 8. Really good story. which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people came up, thought about that. Well, just throw him in the Lazarus pit. So anyway. Now, number 36. Now, I'm not sure if I disagree with this, but he explains himself. Number 36, Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds. Soon after Darkseid's defeat, Superman is called into the 31st century, helps out another multiversal crisis happening in the future, focusing on the Legion. This story doesn't really have anything to do with the main Final Crisis tale. This I agree with. And in ways it shows Superman and others returning to the present day at the end, directly contradicts how Superman returns to the present in Final Crisis number 6. Further explanations are below. So don't be fooled by the tower. However, an enjoyable read and a must for any Legion, Superboy, and Flash fan. Okay, now. Number 37, Batman number 702. Events from Final Crisis number 1, 2, 5, 6, and 7 are retold from Batman's perspective. Awesome, awesome book. Bruce leaves a recorded message for his friends in the future to find, a message that leads directly into the return of Bruce Wayne, which is a trip through time. Now, he mentions number 38, DC Universe Last Will and Testament. He says, yeah, this doesn't fit. It just doesn't. I've read this comic book 3 times over, taking notes. I've tried and tried to make it fit into Final Crisis timeline. It doesn't work. It opens up saying that the heroes expect the world to end the next day, which implies this takes place before Darkseid's final defeat in Final Crisis number 7. Reality is collapsing, except that Bruce Wayne is seen alive and well in this issue. Also, Tim Drake and Black Lightning should both still be justifiers if that's when this issue takes place. Another thing, readers know from Superman comics that Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent talked about the death of Pa Kent, meaning that the man must have died soon before Final Crisis began, or the two heroes wouldn't have had time for this conversation. So how can Jonathan Kent be in this issue? And hey, does Deathstroke assume that Geo-Force doesn't know his own country's native tongue? Nothing against Brad Metzler, it's just that this story needs some editing. It simply doesn't work with everything else that was happening. And that wraps it all up, as it were. Now, of course, some of you are probably wondering how it's known what issue occurs when. Well, some issues specifically tell you when they occur in relation to each other if you simply read the dialogue and captions carefully. Other issues, some comic book detective work was involved. For instance, the Final Crisis, Rage of the Red Lanterns. In Rage of the Red Lanterns one-shot, Hal mentions that Orion's body has been found, but he doesn't mention John's fate at all, and Earth has clearly not yet been quarantined by the Alpha Lanterns. The Rage of the Red Lanterns story reads directly into the Agent Orange storyline in the main Green Lantern title, and it's clear during all of that that Hal does not have a chance to return to Earth until after the events of Green Lantern number 42. In Final Crisis number 1, readers are not specifically told how much time passes between page 15, when Hal and John call in Orion's body, and page 16, when Dr. Light and Mirror Master find the Mobius chair. If readers assume that at least a full day passes in between those pages, that gives Hal and John just enough time for their adventures against the Red Lanterns and Larfleeze. This isn't that far out there as theories go. An issue of Batman R, Rest in Peace, looked as if it took place over a day or two, and Grant Morrison later revealed that actually 5 days had passed for the characters. Final Crisis, Rogue's Revenge. At the beginning of the story, the Rogues have recently left Libra's employ, so this must take place after the scene in Final Crisis number 2 when they are depicted to still be working with him. Since the anti-life equation hasn't been unleashed on Earth yet, it takes place before Final Crisis number 3. Now, Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds. Despite the title, this miniseries cannot take place during Final Crisis. I'm not sure about this, but listen to what he has to say. Because Superman is gone for much of the third of the story, it doesn't return until issue number 6, when Darkseid has already taken over the Earth. In Red Robin number 3, a flashback scene that takes place days after Final Crisis, Wonder Girl discusses Batman's apparent death and bring up the fact that Superboy and Bart Allen both died and have not yet come back. And when we see Superman and his friends return to modern day at the end of this miniseries, they have time to have a happy reunion and the world seems normal, contradicting how Superman arrives in the modern day alone during the end of the Final Crisis. Therefore, Legion of Three Worlds has to take place after Final Crisis number 7, which means that the scene at the beginning of Final Crisis number 6, where Superman mentions that he had just had an adventure with the Legion, refers to some other untold story. That's not what Morrison intended, but since no one apparently told Geoff Johns or others at DC, that's how this has to play out to make sense. Which does make sense. So, there you go. A rundown, a reading order. A complicated mess. I'm going to put the link on the post so you guys can see it. Give us your thoughts on what you think of that. I've barely scratched the surface of checking some of this stuff. Some of the stuff I've never read, I don't know if it's in digital form or not. I never did read the Seven Soldiers thing, but that looks like some interesting stuff now that you look at it. As always, you can wrap this up. It's getting kind of late. I had to get up in the morning, go to work. Haven't been to work in a week. Been sick. Very sick. Anyway, feeling much better. Not coughing too much. So anyway, send us your thoughts to podcast at talesfromthelongbox.com or join our growing by single digits group of people that is on the Facebook page. Just do a search for Tales from the Long Box podcast. Or you can comment on the actual episodes. And that is it for this week. Thanks for joining us.